And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Till 3 on this Monday with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, as always, we recap the football weekend. I'll get you my winners and losers from the college football weekend. Speaking of which, a big weekend for the two teams, two Power 5 teams in state. South Carolina getting a huge win as they punch their ticket to a bowl, and Clemson showing that, at least for the time being, the ACC still seems to run through Clemson once again this year. Plus, some thoughts on the college football playoff after a bit of a chaotic weekend. More coaches losing their jobs. I'll once again defend Dan Mullen. Stop me if you've heard that before. We'll get to our sound check later on. The best sound, the best audio from the football weekend. I'll give you my breakdown of everything that happened in week 11 of the NFL season. And a whole lot more throughout the afternoon as we recap what happened this past football weekend, and also get ready for the Citadel against Duke tonight, tipping off at 9 p.m. from Cameron Indoor. Looking forward to that coming up this evening. You can always join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just head on over to our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Monday, I'm on the road getting ready for the Citadel and Duke tonight. Joe is back in the studio as always. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
What's going on? We had a very interesting weekend in football this past weekend, didn't we?
Oh, we sure did.
Oh,
some
yes.
Big wins, yes, for South Carolina, I mean, for Clemson, and for I heard from one of the teams that won the state title as
yes, Holly Hill Academy, and yes. In fact, Michael Nelson still undefeated as a football coach.
How about that? Now, what about the other teams we were pulling for?
Yes, Williamsburg Academy fell to Hilton Head Christian 34-7. Yes,
that's too bad.
Yeah, still had a great season though.
Absolutely. And, well, in the meantime, we wait on the victory parade for Michael Nelson and his team.
Yeah, and on the high school scoreboard show that you heard on this station on Friday night, Billy Baker, I believe, is the one talking to Coach Nelson, and he said that the difference in the game, the final score was 28-24. The difference in the game was Andrew Jackson Academy committed 5 turnovers, Holly Hill 0.
Wow. Yeah, hey, that's how you win, or in Andrew Jackson's case, lose a game. Always comes down to the turnover margin. So congratulations to them and all the champions that may have been crowned this weekend. And we were working on the logistics to get one of those nice convertibles and schedule the parade so I could be the grand marshal and get ready to go for Coach Nelson and his team after they run the table again. Back-to-back undefeated seasons and state champions. Crazy. Quite the dynasty. I heard Florida made that move on Dan Mullen just to try to go get Coach Nelson. We always start...
Yeah, well, also, there's a big battle of the undefeateds this coming Friday between Fort Dorchester and Dutch Fork. For the 5A lower state championship, and pretty much whoever wins that one may end up winning state. They'll play the winner of the upstate championship between Gaffney and Spartanburg.
Oh, all right. So you got that to look forward to here this Thanksgiving week. We'll be on the air, of course, through Wednesday, off for the holiday at the end of the week. And we got plenty to do in the next couple of weeks. Get ready for Clemson, South Carolina, everything else this weekend. But, of course, on Monday, we always break down what happened on the past weekend with plenty going on in football. We always begin with our winners and losers. I got plenty of each. 8 winners, 8 losers. Let's hit it. Winners and losers from the college football weekend. All right, I got 8 winners for you. Number 1, and I always order these in level of importance or in terms of you know, just a ranking. The biggest winners. Number one is Cincinnati. Cincinnati's coming off the biggest win of the year. Or I should say the biggest win of the weekend. Because they got the win that we have been waiting for. We've been waiting for Cincinnati to dominate like they did on Saturday. Now, SMU, granted, they were down their top two wide receivers for an offense that is very pass-heavy. But with that said, I don't think that makes the difference in that type of outcome where that game was over in the first half. And Cincinnati put the hurting on SMU, ended up winning by 34. That's what we've been waiting to see for a few months. I had Cincinnati on upset alert. I could tell you my own personal life, I bet against Cincinnati this weekend. And yet they were up 41. In fact, it got up to 48-0 in the second half before SMU finally scored. And you're wondering, where has that been the last couple of weeks? Finally, when Cincinnati, you know, it's almost like they've been playing to the level of their competition because SMU is the best team they've played in a couple of weeks, and they took them out to the woodshed. Big time win for Cincinnati and for those like myself who have said they haven't looked like a playoff team this year. But not only that, they've gotten the help elsewhere. When you look around college football, we could already cross off the ACC, but if you didn't want to prior to this past week, now that Wake Forest lost again, right, you cross off the ACC, they're not going to have a playoff team. Then Oregon, more on them in just a moment, lost over the weekend. You can cross off the Pac-12 as well. So if you're Cincinnati trying to make the playoff as a group of five team and you're looking at those Power Five conferences, two have wiped themselves out. So now you're down to three conferences and four spots. Now the SEC could get two teams if Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC title game. But let's assume Georgia beats Alabama, and from what you saw this past weekend, you probably feel better about Georgia in that game, certainly than Alabama, the way the Crimson Tide have been playing. If Georgia wins, you get the one SEC team. You imagine you get one Big Ten team, probably the winner of this weekend, you would assume. And then you could even, if you still say the Big 12 gets a team, then you come down to that fourth spot where it may be between Cincinnati and Notre Dame, but Cincinnati beat Notre Dame. Now, the committee has not really used that head-to-head as much as they should, a la Michigan State. But the point being for Cincinnati, they got a big win this weekend, and they're having other conferences help them out by crossing themselves off. Number two on the list of winners is Ohio State. Cincinnati and Ohio State are the two clear winners in all of this. Cincinnati, I put number one because they have more to prove. But for Ohio State, a big-time win. Consider this. They were going up against number seven, Michigan State. They led by as many at halftime as Georgia was leading at halftime over Charleston Southern. At the half, those two games were the same. Difference was Georgia was playing Charleston Southern out of the Big South. Ohio State was playing the number seven team in the country. That's a big-time win for Ohio State and quite the curb stomp on Michigan State as that game was over very quickly. It was 49-0 in the first half. We thought this would be one of the biggest games of the year, right? Ohio State's facing Michigan State, then Michigan. This is a big two-week stretch. They took it to Michigan State on Saturday. Largest margin of victory in a top 10 matchup since 1945. That's how dominant Ohio State was on Saturday. And they have shown. Somebody on the text line asked me last week, right, who would I pick to be in the national championship? And I said, well, clearly Georgia's the number one team. It's hard to try to pick who the number two team is. I had said Ohio State at the time, but acknowledged I didn't feel great about it at that moment. Well, I feel much better about it now. I think Ohio State has shown in recent weeks that they have played as the second-best team in the country. Maybe Alabama's in that conversation as well, but Ohio State has been a little more dominant, and they have the number one offense. And I would love a national championship. At this point, it's probably become the dream scenario for college football where you have Ohio State and that offense against Georgia and that defense in the national championship. At this point, that's probably the best case scenario. But what a message sent by Ohio State against Michigan State on Saturday. And now as they get ready to take on Michigan this week, how many people would really feel good about picking Michigan based off of the past couple of seasons and what we just saw on Saturday? Ohio State is on their way. If Georgia takes care of Alabama, right, Ohio State slides in. They may not even have to wait that long. We'll see what happens with this week's rankings or this weekend. They'll slide into that number two spot. And that takes me to number three on my list of winners. The two big quarterbacks, C.J. Stroud for Ohio State, Bryce Young for Alabama. Because these two have now separated themselves for the Heisman. It's usually a quarterback, certainly an offensive player, that wins the Heisman Award. And we've been waiting this year for somebody to create some sort of distance. It's been wide open because there really hasn't been that premier star this year in college football. until at least Saturday, when Stroud and Bryce Young both played excellent in wins against ranked teams, and the two of them combined for 11 touchdowns on Saturday. Stroud at one point had 17 straight completions. Bryce Young set the record for most passing yards for Alabama, which prior to Saturday, I believe that record had stood since I think it was 1964. That's how long that passing yard record has been around, and Alabama has had some good quarterbacks recently. Right now in the Heisman race, it comes down to those two. Kenneth Walker looked to have a bit of a lead after his performance against Michigan, but then Saturday, right, we always look for these Heisman moments. Well, I think that was one Saturday for Stroud and Ohio State against Michigan State. And when you fall behind 49-0, there's not much you can do if you're a running back. So that hurt Walker on Saturday. Stroud and Bryce Young taking a big leap ahead. And in the Heisman race, I think those are your two front runners currently. Number four on the list of winners from over the weekend, I'm going to say the Big Ten. Because Oklahoma State and Oklahoma both took care of business. Now, Oklahoma snuck out of there with a win against Iowa State. Oklahoma State, far more impressive. But now you get this premier matchup of Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, two top teams in the Big Ten as the Big Ten tries to get a team into the playoff. And plus, it keeps the conference alive for the playoff. You would imagine that game, of course, you're going to have to go on, you know, and win the next week. But that game is like a play-in for the Big 12 between Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. And what a game on paper it should be. Now, Mike Gundy is only 2-14, I should say, in his career against Oklahoma. He's going to need to come up with a big victory. I don't think he's ever had a defense like this, though, going up against Oklahoma. Oklahoma State has allowed the fewest points by a Big Ten team since 2009. They're coming off their first shutout since 1995, and they surrendered only 108 yards Saturday against Texas Tech, fewest yards they have allowed since 1999. This Oklahoma State defense is really good, and the Big 12 is in a pretty good spot. We hear about Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, and then kind of off in the distance, you're not really paying attention. The Big 10 has these two teams with each one loss that are going to be battling this week in a big-time game, and essentially it'll be like a quasi-play-in game for that conference, you would imagine. Number five on the list of winners, and we'll get more into this coming up, but it is South Carolina. To beat Auburn at home, to do so when you were an underdog of over a touchdown, and, of course, to punch your ticket to a bowl game. I was talking about this throughout last week. You know, a bowl isn't what it once was in college football. It's a reward for mediocrity. You go 6-6, sometimes 5-7 gets you to a bowl. But for first-year head coaches especially, it's very important. Because not only does it give the guys something to look forward to, or it shows some sort of, you know, accomplishment in that first season, but also it gives you an extra month of practice. And that's big for a young coach, first-year coach, building up a program. So a big win for South Carolina on Saturday. We'll get more into that coming up in a little bit. But you know what? Florida's down season, the others have reaped the benefits in the SEC. Tennessee, Missouri, South Carolina, all going bowling in large part because of Florida. And even you could say on the other side, LSU's struggles in the SEC. Number six on the list of winners, I'm going to say the playoff committee. Look, they have been taking some heat the last couple of weeks, and I think rightfully so, for putting Michigan ahead of Michigan State and ignoring the head-to-head outcome. But after you watch Saturday, a lot of people, I'm sure, came away thinking like, oh, yeah, you know what? They were right in putting Michigan ahead of Michigan State. Michigan took care of business against not a very good team, and Michigan State got absolutely embarrassed by Ohio State, looking like they didn't belong on the same field. I know Michigan State beat Michigan head-to-head, and that's what should matter most. But also, don't forget, the Big Ten did acknowledge that they blew a call. I'm not a big blame-the-refs guy, but the Big Ten did admit afterwards that they blew a big call that could have changed that game when Michigan lost to Michigan State. The committee probably feels vindicated after Michigan State got curb-stomped on Saturday. People are doing their job for them. The only issue they have now is Cincinnati. It's getting harder and harder to keep Cincinnati out of the top four. We'll see if they can do that again tomorrow night. The number seven winner, and more on this coming up, but it is Clemson. 543 yards of offense. They score over 30 points for the first time this year. They take down a top 10 team. For Clemson, that's clearly the best win of the season. Dabo Swinney was campaigning last week for his team to be ranked. And you can understand that all of their losses have been quote-unquote good losses, but Clemson really didn't have a good win just yet. Not until Saturday. Not only did they beat a top 10 team, but the way they did it as well. I mean, that was their best performance all year. If you're a Clemson fan, you're probably thinking, where has that been all season? This could be a very different year if we played like that. 543 yards of offense, over 30 points for the first time, and now Clemson has won four in a row. They have scored 30 points or more in all four games, and they have a chance to win 10 games once again this season. Clemson playing better here in the second half of the year. And the last winner, eight of each today on this Monday from college football, we have to give a shout-out to UTSA. They remain undefeated with a late victory against UAB. They scored a touchdown with 7 seconds left to win the game, and they're going to their first ever Conference USA championship game after what has been an undefeated season so far. By the way, just quickly, some honorable mentions. You have Pittsburgh going to the ACC championship game and a chance to get their first 10-win season since Dan Marino was quarterback there. Wisconsin punched their ticket to the Big Ten title game. And Florida State, after starting the year 0-4, have gone 5-2 since then. And with a win Saturday against Florida, which is now looking very likely, they'll go to a bowl game after an 0-4 start while beating their rival in the process. This could actually shape up to be a pretty good year for Florida State after a horrendous September. Now on to the losers, because I have eight of those as well. And number one is Oregon. I mean, they just blew their opportunity, their chance to go to the playoff. The Pac-12 is lumped in with them because the Pac-12, once again, you can cross them off. The Pac-12 should not have a playoff team once again this year. And what's most disappointing, if you're an Oregon fan or a member of the program, is that they got beat at their own game. Mario Cristobal was a great offensive line coach. He's now their head coach. And that's what Oregon has always been great at. Good in the trenches. More physical. Right? They can run it down your throat. They play tough defense. Well, Saturday against Utah, they got beat in the trenches. And Utah outrushed Oregon by almost 200 yards on Saturday. They beat them at their own game with Oregon's season on the line. They were down 21-0, and this is what I love from Kyle Whittingham in Utah. They used their timeouts and forced Oregon to punt late in the first half. And then Utah returned the punt 78 yards for a touchdown and went up 28-0 going into the half. I love when coaches are aggressive like that. He could have sat back and said, 21-0, that's good enough against a top five team in the country. No, he wanted to try to force the punt, get even more points going into the locker room, and it worked out perfectly. And Utah beat Oregon over the head 38-7. By the way, props to Utah. They're heading to the Pac-12 title game now for the third time in the last 4 years. Kyle Whittingham does a great job over there. And Oregon, meanwhile, they had their season ahead of them. I said last week, they're unspoiled. It's going to be tough to try to beat Utah twice here in the next 3 weeks. And they got blown out on Saturday. Cross Oregon off, cross the Pac-12 off. When you talk about the playoff conversation in college football, they're done. Number two on the list of losers, Michigan State decision makers. It may work out in the long term, but we got these reports last week about Mel Tucker about to get a $95 million contract. It would make him the second highest paid head coach in all of college football. We may get more into this a little bit later on as well. But he had a losing season his 1 year at Colorado, gets hired at Michigan State, has a losing season his first year at Michigan State, good year this year, but he gets $95 million and then immediately goes out there and he's down 49-0 days later against Ohio State. Right? Not a good look. Now, one game does not make a coach's career or, you know, you're not offering that much money if your mind can change on one performance. But it's just terrible timing, right? Timing is everything in life. And you offer up a guy 95 mil and then the team goes out and they lose 49-7 in their biggest game of the season. And it's like, ooh, that doesn't look good. Not good optics, right? It's like complimenting your kid or getting him something for doing well in school and then he flunks the final exam the next day. It doesn't look great. It doesn't make your decision look very smart. More on this a little bit later on when we talk about coaches. But Michigan State, kind of with some egg on their face after that talk about the contract last week, and then they went out and played like that on Saturday. Number three on the list of losers is Wake Forest because they couldn't close out the ACC on Saturday. They would have with a win. Now the door is still open, by the way, still left open for Clemson if they could get some help. They could still be in the ACC championship by the time we get to that point. But for Wake Forest, they showed why they were never a legitimate playoff team this year because that defense is terrible. And it's not to take anything away from Clemson, but Clemson went off for 543 yards for a struggling offense, season-high number of points. They controlled Wake. Even with three turnovers, Clemson still, you know, did enough. And for Wake Forest, that was their chance. Go there, beat Clemson, lock up your spot in the ACC title game. It's the best Wake Forest team since 2006. going up against the worst Clemson team since 2010, and they still got beat up pretty good. Shows that gap, right? I've said this before. All these teams in the ACC have been waiting for this opportunity. Oh, just wait till Clemson's down. We'll show you, right? We just need our chance. When Clemson's down, we'll take over the conference. And Wake Forest put on a good show this year. But when push came to shove Saturday against Clemson, they did not show up. Sam Hartman had the worst game of his season. Wake Forest had their worst game of their season. And they did not play well whatsoever. Certainly did not look like a top 10 team Saturday against Clemson. And they have left the door open, as small of a crack as it may be, the door is left open now in the ACC. Wake Forest could have taken care of business and closed it out themselves on Saturday. Number four in the list of losers, Texas. They have now lost six in a row for the first time since 1956. They're just 2-6 in the conference. They are not going to a bowl game this year. The last time Texas missed a bowl game will cost Charlie Strong his job. He got fired. You're not going to fire Steve Sarkisian 1 year in, but things obviously not going well for Texas. They lost to West Virginia on Saturday. Number five on the list of losers, I think the Florida decision makers. Clip this audio, throw it in my face down the road. I think Florida will regret this decision. Now, if you listen to the show, I've said this before, right? You probably think I'm related to Dan Mullen with how much I defend him. We'll talk a little more about this later on, but there's just no more patience. Remember, it wasn't that long ago that Mullen lost by one score in the SEC title game. It was less than a year ago. It wasn't that long ago when Dan Mullen gave Alabama one of their toughest matches this year. That was just about 2 months ago, if that? Coaches should be able to have one bad year, especially when you lose your three best players on offense. This has been a disaster of a year for Florida. There's no denying that. But I think you need to give a guy more than three quarters of a season to try to turn things around when he's had the track record of a Dan Mullen. And you may say, there's no way he could turn this around. Maybe not. My whole thing, though, is if you're going to move on from him, who's getting you excited? If you're a Florida fan today, like, are you jumping out of your seat at the opportunity to go bring in Billy Napier? He may be a great coach. He may go win an SEC championship one day. But are there the names out there right now that you're thinking, we got to move on from the guy who had us in an SEC championship last year because we're going to go get this guy instead? I just don't see that out there. Number six on the list of losers, Iowa State. I've been beating up Iowa State over the past week or two, and they've been beating up themselves. They lost to Oklahoma on Saturday. It's their fourth one-possession loss of the season. And after being a top-10 team to begin the year with playoff aspirations, they're now 6-5. They may not even have a winning season this year. And Saturday, against Oklahoma, they had six fumbles and allowed seven sacks. It was horrendous. And this coming off Matt Campbell's odd quote last week that we talked about on the show, where he said he didn't have any dreams of winning a championship this year. He just wanted his team to play their best. Something along those lines, which I thought was a bad look. This has been a lousy year for Iowa State. It got worse on Saturday. Number seven on the list of losers, Georgia Tech. They were down 45-0 at the half against Notre Dame. They're 1-7 against winning teams this year. They haven't won a game themselves since October 9th. And for Jeff Collins, I know this is quite the overhaul, going from a triple option to a pro offense attack, but he has won exactly three games in each of his first 3 years. Not a lot of improvement there. 9-24, and they have a date with Georgia this week. They just lost 55-0 to Notre Dame. What is Georgia going to do to them? And they'll be 9-26 in Jeff Collins' first 3 years. Not good enough. They've allowed over 480 yards in seven straight games, just the fourth team to ever do that. Things have not gotten any better at Georgia Tech. And lastly, my final loser, number eight on the list, is Southern Cal. They suffered their biggest loss to UCLA since 1954. They surrendered over 50 points against UCLA for the first time ever, and they did it at home. They now need to win their final two games just to get to a bowl. They don't have a head coach. They have been largely uncompetitive these last couple of months. USC is in a bad spot. They need to make sure they hire the right guy to turn this thing around. And as always, our long-winded opening segment of a Monday, where I give you all the winners and losers from the college football weekend. Eight of each. And one last one, an honorable mention. UMass announced yesterday that they're hiring Don Brown as their next head coach, defensive coordinator of Arizona. I am a big Don Brown fan. Coach Brent Thompson of the Citadel actually worked for Don Brown. He speaks very highly of him. When I went to high school, one of my teachers played for Don Brown at, I think it was a Division II school at the time. And he would rave about Don Brown every day. And I used to tell my buddies about this Don Brown guy. And then Don Brown became defensive coordinator at UConn in our backyard and did pretty well there. And then he went on to Michigan, and he was at Maryland, and now he's at Arizona, and he's gotten bigger jobs, and he's considered, you know, one of the best defensive minds in the country. Here's why I mentioned UMass, because two of the last three hires UMass has made were previous head coaches of their own program. They brought back Mark Whipple. Don Brown had been their head coach before. They just hired him. Two of the last three times they had to hire a head coach, they just went back and hired somebody who was previously their head coach. We talk a lot about retreads and lazy hires. I don't think you could get any lazier than that. Two of the last three times they needed a coach, they said, well, let's try Mark Whipple again. Didn't work last time. Maybe it'll be better this time. It wasn't. And now hiring another coach, they said, well, let's go get Don Brown again. Didn't work last time. Maybe it'll be better this time. How often do you see a program just keep going back to the well of former coaches they got rid of? UMass, that program's in the dumpster. Be more creative than going and get coaches you had previously who already didn't work out there. So UMass, you get a mention on my list of losers as well this morning. There you go. Plenty of winners and losers from the college football weekend. When we come back, a couple of big winners in the state of South Carolina, including the Gamecocks. We'll get to South Carolina's big win for Shane Beamer. Big-time win for him. Biggest win for the Gamecocks in a couple of years. I don't think that's hyperbole. And for Clemson, they showed their old man strength on Saturday. I'll get to those two thoughts when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, the Gamecocks get their biggest win in a number of years. And I don't think that's hyperbole. Plus, Clemson getting a big win on Saturday, too, as they showed their old man strength. And I'll let you know what I mean by that. Coming up here on the Morrow Midday Show, Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. As always, we open up a Monday with our winners and losers from the college football weekend. Plenty of each. If you ever miss anything from that, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. By the way, on the subject of, let's say, losers, and maybe that's too harsh of a word, what are we doing today in women's basketball with the battle for Atlantis? You have the number one team, South Carolina, against the number two team, UConn. They're playing right now in the championship of that tournament on a noon on a Monday. I know it's a holiday week, but I think people are still working today. Right? It's not Black Friday. It's not the day after the holiday. It's Monday after a weekend where people are already off this week. So I don't think – maybe some people take the week off. You get a full week. But if you're already going to be off Thursday, Friday, maybe most people probably feel like I got to get in there Monday and Tuesday at least. Maybe I take off Wednesday. Right, Monday, people are working today. A noon tip-off between the two best teams in college basketball, this should be a game. And I know it's a tournament, so technically you didn't know if this matchup would even happen. Either team could have lost over the weekend. You knew it was unlikely, right? In women's basketball, we don't get those upsets. What are we doing putting this game at noon? This should be the game of the year. And it's at noon on a Monday when you're still coming off of a big football weekend. You're not thinking about the women's basketball game on a Monday afternoon. I don't get this. I even had to Google it. I thought, well, wait a minute. They're in Atlantis. I thought that was Eastern time zone. Maybe I'm off. I Googled it. It is Eastern time zone. They're tipping off at noon there, local time. What are we doing here? Why is this game at noon? And by the way, the other game is going at 2:30. So they're putting the championship first. Oregon's playing South Florida at 2:30. Like, even that's better. I'd rather have a 2:30 tip-off than a noon for this big game. But why not put it at 7 o'clock? Maybe they don't want to compete with Monday Night Football, but you're telling me noon is better on a Monday? The game of the year in women's basketball? By the way, South Carolina is getting beat up pretty good right now. UConn leads 27-15, 8 minutes left in the they just started the second quarter. So if you're unable to watch that one. If you're going to watch it on the DVR later on, sorry, I just spoiled the beginning for you. But UConn's got the lead early. What are we doing playing that game at noon? That should be the highlight of the especially the early season until conference play begins in women's basketball. So, loser may be too harsh of a word, but the decision makers or the schedule makers in women's basketball or just the battle for Atlantis, they're on that list for putting this game at noon today. And it's the Bad Boy Mowers women's battle for Atlantis. Can we get a better sponsor than that, than the Bad Boy Mowers sponsoring the Battle for Atlantis for women's basketball? That just is a silly. It's like all these bowl games we get. Anyways, getting back to football, from over the weekend. Let's start with South Carolina. We'll get to Clemson as well because both teams got big wins on Saturday. For South Carolina, I thought Saturday was the biggest win since we have been on the air. I would say it's the biggest win for South Carolina since they beat Michigan in that bowl game in 2017. And that may sound like a prisoner of the moment, overreaction, hyperbole type of take. If you think there's a bigger win in between, feel free to let me know. You can always give the show a call, 843-721-9500. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. You can text the show, 843-608-1734. You can head on over to the website, charlestonsportsradio.com, click on our show page, and leave a comment for the show, and I will get those comments as well. You may point to Georgia a couple years ago, but I thought Saturday for South Carolina because of the significance, the fact that they're going to a bowl game in year one of Shane Beamer. When they beat Georgia a couple years ago, big-time win. But it was the difference between winning three games that year and four games. It becomes a footnote. You think back and say, like, oh, yeah, remember when we beat Georgia? Like, that was good. But you don't really think much about that season. And the game didn't carry much weight. It was a great win. Then you just go out and you lose the next couple anyways. It's like, all right, well, we're going to have a losing season. That was a nice victory in a tough year. In fact, probably helped keep Will Muschamp around, right? You lose that game, you go 3-9. I don't know. Maybe they move on from him a year sooner. That would have been a better thing. You go back to that Michigan game, that was winning a bowl game. It was the Outback Bowl, but it was year two of Will Muschamp. It was their ninth win of that season in 2017, and you beat Michigan. At the time, you're feeling good about the program heading into 2018. There were high hopes at the time that Will Muschamp was ahead of schedule. They just beat Michigan. They won a bowl game. That next year, they went 500. It was all downhill from there. But I think at the time, that game against Michigan seemed like a big-time win for the program and the direction under Will Muschamp. And I think Saturday against Auburn was the biggest win since then for similar reasons. Because you beat Auburn at home. Look, the Gamecocks went decades, almost like a century without beating Auburn. They've now beaten them back-to-back years. You beat Auburn at home. You win two games in the conference this year in which you were more than a touchdown underdog in. But most importantly, you get to that bowl game, which is what I've been talking about going back to last week for those same reasons. That it gives you something to strive for, right? It gives you certainly a sense of accomplishment. Going to a bowl isn't the most important thing in college football. I know it's supposed to be, but let's be honest, right? You go to the play in the Gasparilla Bowl, who cares? But, right, especially you're 6-6, like, oh, big whoop, we were 500 this year. But when you're rebuilding a program, the difference between going 5-7 and just going home and going 6-6 and feeling a sense of accomplishment, you accomplish something. You're going to a bowl game for the first time in a couple of years. Did it in the first year of Shane Beamer. I think that is a big deal for a first-year program. Now, if you're at Texas and you're going to a bowl because you're 6-6, right, who cares? If you're some of these other programs, you're going to a bowl because you're 6-6, who cares? But when you do it in year one, I do think there's a difference between that 5-7 record and that 6-6 record. You did accomplish something. You went to a bowl. And for year one, after they won, what's just six games the last 2 years combined, right? That's something good for Shane Beamer. Plus, of course, it gives you the extra month of practices. But for the Gamecocks now, you beat Florida, and look, Florida is a mess, but they have more talent on paper than South Carolina. If you look at 24/7's team rankings based off of talent on the roster, and this is based off of recruiting rankings, South Carolina is probably higher than you think, but still ahead of them is Florida and Auburn. Florida and Auburn certainly have more talent than the Gamecocks, and they're both top 20 in terms of most talented rosters in the country. Is Auburn having a great year? They're struggling right now. Right? Is Florida having a great year? Actually, they're having their worst in a couple of years. But still, on paper, these are more talented teams. They get better recruits. They have more talented players. They were favored in both of these two games by over a touchdown, and South Carolina found a way to win each. Now, I was very critical of the Shane Beamer hire. I don't know if he is the guy yet, but what I can tell you is we know that it's, how can I put this? We may not have the yes answer yet, but we know it's not a no yet, if that makes sense. There are certain coaches, you watch them, you realize, yep, this guy does not have it. Jimmy Lake at Washington. There was a reason why they fired him after a year and a half. They realized, nope, this guy is a disaster. First-time head coach. Willie Taggart. Right when he went to Florida State, they realized quickly, nope, this was a mistake. For Shane Beamer, that is not the case. Is he going to end up being the right guy for this program long term? That's to be determined. But you always can get to a no quicker than you can get to a yes, and we have not gotten to that no. Steve Wilks of the Arizona Cardinals, fired after 1 year. They realized very quickly, no, this is a disaster. There are other coaches who will get off to slow starts, and you think, I don't know if this guy's going to be able to win a championship for us, but I know he's not going to be a disaster. Right? And for Shane Beamer, he's in that category. I don't know if he's going to get South Carolina where they want to go, but I feel that through a year here, we can look at the way this program has gone this year and these last couple of wins and think, well, he's not a disaster, at least. Right? Like a lot of times, maybe your significant other, your spouse will come home, you're trying to plan for dinner, and you're thinking, where do you want to go eat? And you say, I don't know, where do you want to go? And they say, I don't know. And they'll throw out a suggestion, and they'll say, well, what about we do Chinese tonight? And you'll say, no, I don't want Chinese. Well, what do you want? I'm not sure. Right? Well, what about Mexican? No, I don't want Mexican. Right? You know what you don't want. You may not know what you do want, but you can easily say if you don't want something. You can't pick exactly like, I don't know what I want to eat, but I know it's not pizza. You know when it's a no, you may not always know when it's a yes in a relationship, right? You may not know. You could see somebody you're in a relationship with. You could see like, yeah, maybe one day we could get to that point where we're talking about marriage, right? You want that door is open, but you'll know right away if it's a no. Like this person, oh, there's no way we could ever work. There's no way we'll ever get married. You'll get to a no much quicker than a yes. So for Shane Beamer, we have not arrived at that no. It's not a no. Is he going to lead them to an SEC championship game eventually? I don't know. But the door is still open. You can't sit here and say, like, oh, no, this guy's a bust, like you can other coaches. Washington fans watching their team lately thinking, oh, no, we hired the wrong guy. Did the Gamecocks hire the right guy? Still to be determined. But you can't say right now that they hired the wrong guy, if that makes any sense. Right? The door is still open for Beamer to continue to build and prove something here. And that was most important in year one. You had to get an answer on the quarterback and the head coach this year for the Gamecocks. Even the bowl game is secondary. Answer those two questions. They did not get an answer on the quarterback. In fact, I guess the answer is you probably don't have a good enough quarterback on this roster. But when it comes to the head coach, the answer is we don't know just yet if he's going to be the guy. But a year in, you feel like there is a chance that he could build something here. At the end of year one, and it's not over yet, you got Clemson coming up on Saturday. That would be a big win. If the Gamecocks beat Clemson on Saturday, that probably is the bigger, you know, bigger, even bigger than Auburn. That's the bigger win since Michigan a couple years ago. But you look at South Carolina. They've won a couple of games in the conference with lesser talent, right? Overachieved, if you will. They won a couple of games where maybe they shouldn't have. And this morning, the Gamecocks have as many wins as Auburn and Tennessee and more wins than LSU in Florida. Maybe it speaks to the up and down of the SEC this year and the craziness, the chaos in college football. But I also think it speaks to the job Shane Beamer has done in year one. Has it been excellent? No, you know, you snuck out with some ugly wins early. You haven't beaten a ton of great teams, but you're going to a bowl game in year one. You won a couple of games you're not supposed to. And as we wind down year one, we can't say for sure if it's going to be a yes, but I think right now we could say it's not a no. And that's important for a first-time head coach. Clemson also got a big win on Saturday, showing their old man strength. I'll let you know what I mean about that or by that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show. On ESPN Radio.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
The city. For that game tonight, the Citadel and Duke. Looking forward to it in Coach K's final year. Hey, the Bulldogs have already beaten one ACC team. Why not another? Gamecocks got a big win on Saturday against Auburn as they go to a bowl game. I said I think it's the biggest win since their last bowl victory against Michigan in 2017 just because of what we feel like it means at the time. Now, it turns out things didn't go so well for Muschamp afterwards, but at the time, you felt good. They beat Michigan. They get to 9 wins, year 2 of Muschamp. You're thinking, oh, this is our guy. And so I guess a little buyer beware for how you may be feeling today with Shane Beamer and the Gamecocks in year one. But you beat Auburn back-to-back years now. You go to a bowl game. You win a couple of games here late in the season in the SEC in games that technically you weren't supposed to win. I thought that was a big win for the Gamecocks Saturday against Auburn, and here was Beamer on the field afterwards talking about the win.
You're dealing with some emotions right now. What are you experiencing?
Just so happy for these players. They, so happy for them to be bowl eligible after they won two games last year. Just so happy for them and proud of them. Like, since the day I got hired, since we came in here, they've done absolutely everything that we've asked them to do and never flinched. And it was ugly early. And we're down, what, 14-0, and it wasn't looking pretty. Nobody panicked. And then we came right out in the second half. I mean, we talk about this being big boy SEC football, and we literally lined up in the second half and ran the same two plays over and over and over and over and over again. And that's a heck of a team we just beat. But, man, I'm just so happy for these guys and so happy for our fans. I don't know what our fans had plans for in December. We're going bowling somewhere, Quinn. I'm so happy for them.
Well, if nothing else, that's Beamer after the game on the field Saturday. If nothing else, if you're a Gamecock fan, you have something now to look forward to, right? That you get another game this year. It'll be around the holiday season. They get an extra month of practices. And that's why, in this sense, for certainly for a fan, you always want more games. But you're feeling better about the team here down the home stretch, first-year coach, more practices. That's where the importance of that bowl game come into play. Clemson also got, I thought, a big win on Saturday against Wake Forest. Most importantly, it leaves that door cracked open for them to still potentially win the ACC, which is hard to imagine. They'll need some help. They need Wake Forest. I believe it's Wake Forest to lose again and then NC State to lose. I think that's what they need. And then the way the tiebreaker shapes up and everything, this and that, Clemson could go to the ACC championship, if I have that correct. But more importantly, you know, it just showed that for Clemson, that was a chance to defend their castle. Wake Forest was coming to their building, needing to win the conference, and becoming, you know, the new team of the ACC after Clemson has been dominating for years. And I've been saying this afternoon that they showed their old man strength. That was like when you were feeling good, right, about, let's say, shooting hoops. You've been beating your buddies in one-on-one. You've been feeling good about your game. You've been getting better. You've been working hard. Now you're, in middle school, or maybe you turn 14. You're playing on the – you get to high school, you're playing the high school team. Whatever it is, you're feeling really confident. And you challenge the old man to a game of pickup hoops in the driveway, and he still puts you in his place. And he's maybe, you know, up towards 60 now, and you got your jumper going, and you beat all your buddies. But you still can't get past him. And he may not have the same game he once had. Your father can't move as well out there. And he's a little more, maybe a little more brittle these days. You got to be a little careful. But still, you can't get past him. He's stronger than you. He's still bigger than you. Still better than you. And that's a little bit like Clemson and Wake Forest. Wake Forest came to town. They're having the much better season. They have the more potent offense. They're having the better year. They're on their way to win the ACC. And Clemson was like, hold on, wait a minute. All right, we still got a little something left. They put Wake Forest in their place on Saturday. You may be beating up on all your little teenage buddies, but you can't get past the old man just yet. You're not on that. You're not at that point. And we all know the rules, right? Once you beat the old man for the first time in the driveway, that's when he has to hang it up. Until that day, until you get your own grown man strength and you become big enough and old enough and athletic enough to finally take down your father in whatever the activity is, whether it's hoops in the driveway, one-on-one, or some sort of baseball competition, whatever you did growing up, whatever the sport was for you, and your father would beat you every time. Maybe it was ping pong, right, or foosball, something like that, one of the hand games downstairs in the basement. Right? Until you could finally get past your father, he was always superior. Once he beat you the first time, then it's done with. Then it's like, okay, he passed me by. Wake Forest has not passed Clemson by. That was their chance. Go into Clemson, beat them, win the ACC, beat them in their own building, show them, hey, this is our conference now. Like Captain Phillips, I'm the captain now. And Clemson said, no, not so fast. You may be having a good year. You may have this explosive offense. We'll show you we still got something left. And for Clemson now, a chance to win 10 games once again, still a chance to win the conference. And with what they've showed these last few weeks and the way the rest of the ACC looks and the way Clemson's still recruiting, right, are you really thinking that next year they're not going to be the favorite once again in the ACC? Seems like a pretty safe bet that Clemson heading into next season will be given every opportunity to turn this thing around, and it'll just be a one-year blip because they're playing much better football here these last few weeks. But that was Wake Forest feeling good and the old man putting them in their place. You've been beating your buddies in one-on-one. You want to challenge your father, and you realize, nope, still can't beat him. That was Clemson against Wake Forest on Saturday. We'll wrap up Hour 1 when we come back. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Wrapping up Hour 1 here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. The Lady Gamecocks have clawed back in it. They're heading to the half in the Bahamas. UConn leads 36-33. That should be a wild second half between those two. Some unforced errors, empty possessions for South Carolina too frequently in the first half. Why they're playing at noon, I have no idea. But a big-time game. So we'll see how the second half plays out in that one between those two. We'll get to our sound check coming up at the top of the hour as we get to some of the best sound from over the football weekend, including some audio from the Gamecocks' big win on Saturday as they go to a bowl last week. And if you ever do miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Of course, last week we did the 10 best things to have out of a bowl, so you can refer back to that list as you celebrate accordingly. When the Gamecocks get to go bowling, you have to celebrate by going bowling as well. Either literally bowling, go to the bowling alley. I always love going bowling. Or you got to have something out of a bowl afterwards. The number one option, of course, is ice cream. You have some victory ice cream after the Gamecocks get a big win on Saturday against Auburn. But don't overlook a nice fruit bowl, some salad. You can go healthy with it. Can't beat mac and cheese. And you can find the full top 10 list from last week's show. Celebrate accordingly. Big win for the Gamecocks on Saturday. We'll get to our sound check when we come back. Get to some of the best audio in the football weekend. Plus, some thoughts on Dan Mullen, just coaches in general in college football these days, the lack of patience. We'll get to our NFL breakdown, running through all the games from yesterday in the NFL coming up later on as well. Plenty more to do as we break down a busy weekend of football throughout the afternoon. It's the Moore Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.